What does it mean to be an equestrian? It's more than just being a fan of horses. It's the riders, coaches, owners, barn staff, grooms, and other support staff. But it's also the people, family, and friends who make up the whole equestrian team. And this podcast is for all of you. I am so excited to be here with you as we explore life in and outside of the show ring. I'm Tracy Mitchell, and I'm here to help you hit your stride. Welcome, everybody, to the second episode of the Equestrian Elements podcast called Hitting Your Stride. So in today's podcast, I have with me Heather Agnew. Heather is a senior yoga instructor and master personal fitness trainer with over 25 years of professional experience in fitness, yoga, Pilates, and mind-body therapies. Heather operates Yoga Trinity, an international yoga teacher training school with programs in vinyasa flow yoga, Pilates, and Thai yoga massage. As a senior instructor, Heather has taught over 15,000 hours of teacher training and trained more than 1,000 mind-body movement instructors over the past 14 years. Heather has built businesses in both Canada and Australia and is keen to share some ideas on how a successful business is not just about the work, but about the self, offering the opportunity of greater self-knowledge, resilience, adaptability, and mindfulness in all aspects of life. Over the years, Heather has worked with a variety of athletes as a personal trainer, yoga, and meditation coach. Now, both Heather and I have worked, we've had the pleasure of working together. We collaborated on working with equestrian athletes to help support the health, well-being, and performance of both horse and rider as a support team. So, welcome, Heather. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to have this amazing conversation with me.
My pleasure. I find it hilarious that you think I'm busy. But yes, middle of a lockdown in a snowstorm, and this is just a delightful part of my day. So awesome. Thank you for having me.
No problem. I've always valued our times together. I know, you know, we have not seen much of each other for quite a while, so it's been great to reconnect, but I always considered you a mentor, because I always thought you had a huge amount of knowledge to offer. And whenever I was around you, I always tried to be a big sponge. So I really appreciate your input for today's podcast.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah. So you and I met back about 20 years ago at Southern Ways. I was massaging horses there for the riders at the barn, and you were riding your friend Buddy.
My friend Buddy, who lived with the donkeys in the back. Yes. Because he had asthma.
Yeah. He was a little quarter horse, wasn't he?
He was a quarter horse and he was lovely. And it was wonderful being part of, you know, adjacent to a competitive barn. I feel like I learned so much more than I would have as a recreational rider.
Yeah.
You know, seeing how everything worked for the competitive riders and all the support that the horses and riders got. That was really exciting.
Yeah, it was kind of like you got a chance to relax and have fun, but you also got to sort of see all the big stuff happening.
Yeah, so there was no pressure on me. I didn't have to perform, but I got the benefit of seeing what went into the performance of a horse and rider team, and which, of course, you were part of, keeping the horses healthy in their very big job of jumping very big fences.
Yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. So it wasn't long after that, and I can't really remember, I don't know, it was kind of like a kismet thing. I felt like you and I just sort of connected, and you included me into your King Wellness Center. So that was a great experience for me. We can touch a little bit about that, later in the conversation, but anything you wanted to add about that as sort of coming together?
I don't remember, but it sounds like me. It sounds like I would have met an amazing professional and thought, yeah, let's do this. Let's add this to what we're doing.
Yeah.
I was really into, at the time, developing community and trying to have a community of really serious professionals that could support the people and the athletes that we were working with. And you were definitely part of that community and awesome. And doing such interesting things.
Oh,
I had to have you part of the team.
That was great. All right. So I really wanted to bring you on this podcast because I thought your insight would be really valuable. You know the horse world, but more as an observer's role. So you can be, you know, a little, what's the word? I don't know, not on the fence of things, but you have that outside looking in. You're not overwhelmed by the horse world. You're an entrepreneur with skills and an intuition slash awareness that I really think that the equestrian world can benefit from. And the part that I've always known about you is how hard that you work at building your business. Now, I know, as you said, you're not that busy right now, but as we were planning for this podcast, you shared with me that you were doing a whole bunch of videos for your teacher training. So that must take up a lot of your time.
It does. It's funny. I'm always telling people that I'm not busy, but I think it's just been so long that I don't think of a lot of the aspects of my work as work anymore. They're just a part of my day, like doing dishes, you know, like that I don't think of it in the same way anymore. That, you know, when you run a business, your brain is partially always occupied with your business. You're sort of always working. I dream work, right?
Yes.
And so my idea of what busy is different now than it used to be. And the way that I work is so different that it can be.
You probably learned how to, you know, be as efficient, or you know, very finely tuned.
I'm all about efficiency.
Yeah.
I'm like competitive about efficiency.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Well, and I think that's part of the reason too, like why I think horse people really, the equestrian world, no matter what business, you know, the equestrian is in, whether it's being a farrier or, you know, a blanket smith or doing something like that, that I think the equestrian world can really benefit from some learning, some finer tuned entrepreneurial skills. I know that I've definitely learned some over the years, and I'm still always learning with my massage business. So it's an ever evolving thing.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. So let me ask you then, because with your personal, so with your yoga instructor training in your offering of courses, one of the ones that you've included, which really caught me, is you offer a professional and personal development as one of your online courses for your yoga teacher training. And in your opinion, how important is personal development for riders and by extension for their horses?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that the better we know ourselves, the better we can be good partners and coaches for our horses. I think that, I mean, in any sport, but particularly when you're dealing with an animal who has its own goals and needs and its own consciousness. And, you know, I think we bring a lot of our own baggage to our experience riding, and that can be really, it can be a huge obstacle, and it can even be harmful. We bring our, you know, past experiences, our fears, you know, beliefs that maybe we haven't fully examined. Maybe they're even not our beliefs. They're like beliefs of coaches past, you know, and even our postural baggage, right? We bring that to our riding, and that can impact our riding and our horses. So I think that, yeah, personal development, like self-regulation skills, mindfulness, you know, even just general self-knowledge can help us to be better observers of ourselves, and our experiences can help us to better manage the ups and downs of each, you know, each ride or each competition or each season. And our horses are going to benefit from that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't remember what it's called, but I remember reading a book about sort of mental training for riders. And I feel like this has been so long, but I feel like it might've been based on Maxwell Maltz's book, Psycho Cybernetics. And it was talking about how much of our experience in the saddle or our relationship with horses comes from our experiences or our expectations. So like if you think your horse is going to shy at a dog barking, maybe you've had a past experience with that, or you're concerned about dogs being around horses, or you've heard a story about that. Well, then, so say you're riding and you see a dog, well, your nervous system reacts to the presence of the dog. And then your horse, which is a herd animal, plus you've coached it to listen to like all of your cues, it gets nervous. It's like, hey, if you're nervous, of course I'm freaking out. So then it shies. And then it confirms for you, ah, yes, horses shy around dogs. But did it shy because it's afraid of dogs, or because you're afraid of dogs, or that, or because you expect your horse to be afraid of dogs? So this is a really big area where riders can do some mental training. Like, the mental training is important for any athlete, but particularly because you've got two athletes in partnership, it's great if riders can develop that kind of self-awareness and understanding about how our beliefs and our nervous system reactions are impacting our horses, right? Absolutely. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And what you were saying at the beginning about, I mean, you know, when I'm working as a massage therapist and I'm working on the horses, you know, I'm talking to riders, and often times, you know, you get the sense that this need for personal development doesn't start just in the saddle. Like, they could have confidence issues, you know, 10 years ago that, you know, they don't need to feel that way anymore. There's no reason for it. So, you know, helping them through that, you know, they don't need, can now help them prepare for what they're open to, what they're ready for, but they don't know it. Mm. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that's just, you know, and I'm a huge fan of personal development. I think everybody should journal, read a book, you know, figure out what makes them tick. I think that's ultimately where it comes from.
Right. I mean, that's my whole world now, right? That's the world of yoga, is being present moment enough and open enough to be able to see your actions and your reactions, and to be able to see how maybe past beliefs are influencing what's happening in the present moment, and then making conscious choices about whether you want to carry that belief with you into the present and into the future. And again, because we're dealing with another athlete when it comes to equestrian sports, an athlete who requires care and support and consciousness, it becomes to me even more important for the equestrian athlete to be able to see their actions and reactions and have better self-regulation in that area.
Yeah, I love it. That's amazing. Okay, so again, with the riders, what kind of physical or strength issues did you most often find yourself having to help riders with when you were training them?
It's so interesting. And I wish I had some equestrian athletes to work with now to see where in general, you know, the general rider is at right now. What I saw a lot back when I was working with a lot of riders was something called upper cross syndrome. An upper cross syndrome is like, imagine someone's facing to the side, so you're seeing them from the lateral view, and draw an X through them. So from their neck flexors, so the muscles in the front of their neck, draw a line to the upper back. And along that line, what we see is weakness or inactivity. So weak neck flexors, weak muscles in the upper back. And then the other arm of the X, you draw from the chest, so tight chest muscles, up to the shoulder elevators, like upper trapezius, levator scapula. Do horses have these muscles?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so you know what muscles I'm talking about. I know nothing about equestrian anatomy, but so if you imagine this X, you can even like draw on your own body from the front of your neck to your upper back, there's weakness.
Yep.
And then from your chest up to the tops of your shoulders, there's tightness or overactivity.
Yeah.
And what this does is it creates, imagine sticking your chin forward, rounding your shoulders forward. It affects your balance in the saddle, right? It can affect you. So it affects your position on a horse. It affects your view of what's ahead. Like literally your gaze is in the wrong place. And it can cause a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort in shoulders, necks, wrists, hands. And this, the reason I find it so interesting to revisit this now is that we've spent like the last decade on devices, right? And so forward head position is even worse now for most people. I've certainly seen in my yoga teaching practice, forward head posture is the most common issue that we see now. And it does literally change everything about your posture from the top down. So and it changes again, like your gaze, it changes your confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And so over the past 10 years or so, I've noticed a really big shift in the general public on this. But then when you take that, you know, when you're driving your car, it's not having such an impact on you. But when you're on a horse and you and your horse's balance is in some aspect reliant on the rider's balance and on the rider's gaze, this is really going to have an impact on that horse rider team. So those are things that, you know, that I did used to work with riders as a general, and I would assume would be significant today due to our device use.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, as soon as you said device use, I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Like that totally makes it even more so. Wow. So how do you think then that affects them mentally when they're in the saddle?
I think that it really, I think on a couple of levels, it affects us. Again, it affects your, you know, where your head is going to impact your balance and impact your view. And I think that can have an effect on confidence. I think that when our body isn't in whatever our best alignment can be, that affects our movement confidence.
Yeah.
And I think that it affects the horse. It shifts your position on the horse. And then you and your horse might not be meeting each other in the same place. And I think, you know, this is just Heather's random theory number 46, but I wonder if our head getting to places before the rest of our body has an impact on us mentally and emotionally, like not literally not feeling in your body as though we're identifying somehow more with our head getting there, but like our whole body's got to get there, right? The center of our body's got to get there at the same time as our head. And I wonder about that. And we certainly see a lot of pain, a lot of tension coming from this issue. And tension, as you know, doesn't just exist within us. Our tension radiates out of us.
Yep.
And it radiates straight into that horse. So, you know, those are ways that our physical issues can really have an impact on us and on the horse rider combination.
Well, absolutely. And that the thing when you mentioned too about your, you know, our heads are kind of getting to where we want to be before we are, I think that affects iLead, right? I mean, that's the one thing that whether you're riding dressage or whether you're reining or whether you're, you know, doing those jumps, like you should be looking for this. We should be guided by our eyes, not necessarily our posture.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, you know, like, I don't know, do you remember taking driver training? I'm not going to say how many years ago that was, but.
You remember that I'm now a motorcycle rider. So I have a motorcycle. So talk about, you know, I went from one horse.
So do they teach you about your gaze on a motorcycle?
Absolutely. If you don't watch your gaze riding a motorcycle, then you're heading over a cliff. Because yeah, right? The horse can fend for itself. So iLead is so important.
Yeah. So, and this affects your posture, and your posture affects where your gaze is going to go. And I mean, it's the same thing in yoga. I see for a lot of students, like their head is, imagine, you know, standing and trying to touch your toes, right?
Right.
Your chin trying to get there before the rest of your body. And that can affect your breathing. It can create a lot of tension, and it doesn't give you the stretch that you're looking for through the back chain of the body. Right. And so we like to think of like moving from the core outward.
Yeah.
And rather than head first. And, you know, again, this is Heather's random theory, but it's like, I feel this. I feel like I've started to identify self much more as my mental self than my physical self, especially as I age and my body doesn't always cooperate with what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I like to think, just like the horse rider combination, I like to think this isn't a duality. This is a union of my mind and my body. And I don't want my brain trying to get there before the rest of my body, because it's like, it's in charge and it knows better. It doesn't know better. There's lots of the cells of my body know about movement often better than my brain does. And so I don't want my mind or my ideas about technique or my intellect always leading movement. Sometimes it's so much more about feel. It's so much more about the cellular sharing. You know, between horse and rider.
Yeah. And the trust between the two.
And the trust, yeah. Right? Yeah. Awesome. And so, yeah, this is something riders can work on, you know, so that means stretching the chest and the tops of the shoulders. That means strengthening the neck flexors in the upper back. Yeah. Those are simple movements. They can be done in the barn. And, you know, any of your listeners can just Google upper cross syndrome. And there's lots of information out there. You can, while you're at it, you can Google lower cross syndrome, which is something else that we can see often in riders.
Right.
So, and those are things that can help, that can make a difference to performance, to health, and to longevity in riding.
Awesome. Those are great tips. I know I'm writing those down. Yeah, because the lower cross, that has to do with your hip flexors, right?
Hip flexors and glutes, lower back and core. So overly active or overly tight hip flexors and lower back muscles, and then inactive or weaker glutes and core muscles.
Interesting. All right. Yeah.
Huh. Which is not helped by sitting at computers.
Right.
Sitting in the car. Sitting in the saddle.
Right? Oh, yeah. We got to get up and get moving more.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, for me, taking movement breaks, having frequent intermittent movement breaks is really important. And as a business owner,
yes,
I spend so much of my time now at a desk. And so it's really important that I make sure that I take those movement breaks to keep, you know, my body in as good a balance as I can. And, you know, a lot of people are getting movable desks now where you can go from sitting to standing regularly, or, you know, I work from home now, so I can go put a load of laundry in or walk the dog, or, you know, and those little movement breaks can be more important, more helpful than, you know, once a week doing a big bout of intense exercise. So yep. Movement has more impact on how our body is shaping itself than exercise.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So doing a little bit of exercise here and there is great, highly recommend it, but it's the everyday movements, it's the repetitive movements that shape our posture.
Yeah.
Yes. And so those are the movements that we want to start bringing more mindfulness to, that we want to start becoming more aware of. And we want to make sure that we get a good enough variety of movement that we don't settle into repetitive patterns.
Yeah. No, I might have you back and we can talk about this some more because I think it's so important, and it doesn't matter whether you're on a horse or not. I think, you know.
No, it doesn't, right?
Right.
If you live in a body, you should know this.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So would you come back?
I will. Of course I'll come back. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. All right. So let's talk about what we did with the King Wellness Equestrian Support Team. Like, can you remember how we came up with this idea?
No, but it sounds like me. It sounds like I was like, I really like Tracy Mitchell. Do something.
Let's work together.
I really like having ideas. I can't remember is the real answer, but I do remember. This is what I remember. I remember seeing in my own riding and seeing like actual competitive riders and noticing that they had their own postural stuff going on that was impacting their bodies. But then that was extending into their horses.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
And I was always heavy on one hip, and, you know, I was being, my coach was saying like, you're leaning to the left. I'm not leaning to the left. I'm leaning to the left. And like 2 seconds later, leaning to the left, like I had this weird postural stuff going on, and it was affecting me, and it was affecting my horse, and it was affecting my horse's confidence, not just his body. Right.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking how much, and I took that back to my yoga practice, and my yoga practice was helping me ride, like, and it was helping me ride more than just my physical stuff. It was helping me mentally, like I didn't know how to be present moment centered within a series of jumps. Jumping was new to me. I was watching all of these riders jump over these huge obstacles, and I was like getting breathless jumping over a pole in the ground. And so the mental training of yoga was really helping me, rather than just racing through a set of very small jumps, I was learning to find the space between the jumps, to be more present in my body, to be more present with each stride, to notice where I was tensing, how my gaze was impacting my horse, and like really noticing how I was getting in the way of a sweet ride with my tension, with thinking too far ahead, with my beliefs. And I thought about how we could help riders with learning those skills and thinking about how they hold their bodies impacts their horses.
Yeah.
And how it might look like the horse is doing all the physical work. Riders need to work on their fitness and muscular balance too, right? Like the horse, yeah, is doing the heavy lifting, but, and a lot of what the rider needs to do in many ways is get out of the way of that, is guide them and then not be in the way. So to do that, riders need to work on their fitness. They need to work on their muscular balance. They need to work on their mental fitness. So, and of course, for your work in that equestrian team, the equine athlete in the partnership, jumping is hard work, traveling is hard work, and massage is a proven treatment, right? It's one of the few proven treatments to help with the soft tissue demands of jumping over things with a potentially very unbalanced human on your back.
Well, right? And that was what I found a lot. I mean, way back when I first started this, I remember one Canadian team rider, I massaged, you know, three of their horses and all three horses showed the same issues. And
right? Yeah.
So are you telling me I'm the problem?
And I'm the denominator.
Yeah, I'm just the messenger. But so I totally agree that the horse, and like we just touched on earlier, you know, that they also absorb, you know, the stress or the tension, the expectation in all of that. But so I think it was fun because you and I worked on sort of the physical part. And then we had Gail who did the visioning. Right. Mm. She worked with the riders on their visioning skills and working on, you know,
visualization and mental rehearsal. And these are skills that some athletes just do naturally.
Right.
And other athletes need a lot of help with. Right.
Yeah.
And there's something we can all use help with. I mean, any athlete could use more support.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, there's always something that athletes could use some support in when it comes to their mental training. I thought it was a really exciting idea, and I wish I'd had more energy to put towards it. At the time, I had a lot going on.
Yeah.
So I was only able to reserve so much time for that program. I hope there's people out there doing it.
I know, right? We had a lot of fun. We even went to Florida there.
Florida.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was fun.
So sort of keeping in line with that. So you obviously know that I've gotten into life coaching. I've added another little, you know, thing to my pot here of stuff that I'm working on. And I was just, what do you think the element of life coaching could have added to what we were trying to offer or to how life coaching could help riders today?
Yeah, I think it could be key. I think that, you know, as I said, every rider could use individualized support. I heard from a lot of the higher level riders, they didn't get any support in terms of like sports psychology, learned self-regulation, they didn't get any of that kind of support until they were at the very top of their game. So it's like they had to succeed before they could be given some tools to succeed. And I thought that sounds so unfair.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, going back to what I was saying about, you know, our old habits, our old patterns, our old beliefs, maybe some of the beliefs of coaches we've had in the past that we don't want to bring with us into our riding today. All of those, I think life coaching can do so much to help us to examine and make, and this is important in every facet of life, to make conscious choices about what you're going to do today and where you want to go tomorrow. And I think so often in every facet of life, whether it be athletics, you know, relationship, business, we're following the choices of what we're already doing, we've got momentum in, or the choices of people who came before us, our parents, our coaches, you know, et cetera, and not necessarily making our own choices.
Yep.
And to me, that's a huge area where a life coach can help you, you know, find and understand and make your own conscious choices.
Yeah, like kind of
so that you're not living someone else's life. You're not riding someone else's ride. You're not running someone else's business. You know, when I know when I started my business, I thought I had to be everything to everyone. I thought I had to do everything everyone else was doing. It took me a really long time to find out, mostly through failure, what my actual goals were. Like, it's like I went into a business not even knowing what my goals were. I just was going along doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a really great place for life coaching, is to help people in that area, you know? Well,
it kind of help peel back the layers a little bit, kind of, you know, peel back, acknowledge what's not working for you anymore. What, you know, would help direct possibilities that you didn't even think of that, you know, could help with.
Like in yoga, we say, you know, weeding the garden.
Yes.
You know, pulling out the things that aren't working for you anymore and then planting new things that you do want to grow there, that you do want to flourish, right?
Nice.
And we often just can't see that stuff for ourselves, you know? We're so good at looking into other people's backyards. I know I am.
Yes.
But looking into our own backyard, we often need a guide, you know? We need someone to help us and support us. And that, I think that's where that could be great work.
Awesome. That's great. All right. So much of what we can ensure a successful business in the world of horses takes a wealth of knowledge. I mean, there's so many different aspects of, like, you're not just a horseman. You've got to be a businessman too, businesswoman, et cetera. So the knowledge of an entrepreneur. So being a long-running successful businesswoman, what kind of advice can you offer the listeners about building a business? I know that's a loaded question, but give me
it is. I mean, just the word successful is so loaded, because you know, I have the privilege of having grown up in an entrepreneurial family. And so it came easier to me to live with the risks of running a business because I'd seen it. I'd lived it.
Yeah. Right? I had the same thing. Yep.
Yeah. And I think not everyone wants to live with those risks, or even understands that they're going to live with those risks.
Yeah.
So I want to say that part of my whatever success I've had is the privilege of having seen it done. Nice. And the privilege of having a fallback position. You know, I could always move back in with my parents. They may not have wanted me, but they had to take me because I'm their child, and I made them.
Yes.
And there definitely were times that I had big failures. I, you know, tried things that didn't work out. And that's a privilege, to be able to take a big risk and know that there's a fallback. So those are big things.
Okay.
I think every business owner needs to take some time to think about what level of risk they're willing to take now and what level of risk they're willing to take in the future. You know, when I started my business, I was really young. I was 21, 22. I worked in my parents' real estate office while I got my personal training business off the ground. It was flexible work because they were my parents. I made them do that. Clearly terrible daughter. And I was able to have an income and have some routine while I went out and got my business off the ground. And there came a point where the balance tipped in favor of my business and I was able to sort of go out on my own.
Yep.
But what I brought with me was, and you and I have talked about this, what I brought with me were skills, not just as an entrepreneur, not just as a good personal trainer, but as a manager. And that's where I see a lot of businesses fall down, is in the management side. So what I learned from my parents' real estate office, and these are, I still use some of their checklists today that have just been adapted to my business.
Interesting.
The policies and procedures of running a business, the boring stuff, the Excel spreadsheets, the new client intake forms, you know, so that every new client or new student gets brought into the business in a way that cares for their needs and that ensures that they've got the information that they need and that I've got the information that I need so that we can move forward together. So the management side of things, I think, is for a lot of people really boring and really time consuming. And so one of the things about success is having that boring background foundation stuff taken care of. before you launch your Instagram account and all the super awesome photos of you doing whatever it is you do, right?
Right.
And that often for people takes, you need help because you don't know what to expect, you know? You don't know what kind of issues are going to come up. So this is a place where getting some help can be really useful. You can be the best, you know, at whatever it is you do, whether it be a farrier or a yoga teacher. But if you can't manage the day-to-day accounts and you can't tell people about what it is you're doing, then your business is not going to work, right? So you've got to be willing to talk yourself up, get the word out, market yourself to your audience, and you've got to be there for client management and for financial management and all of that. It's a lot of hats, right?
And I mean, all of these riders, that are trying to build a name for themselves, they've got all the capability and talent, but they're spending 90% of their time in the saddle around the horses that, you know, it makes it difficult to do this other entrepreneurial stuff.
And that's where, I mean, most of the business owners that I work with now are yoga teachers, and the same thing happens. You're spending all of your time with your students, or you're spending all your time with your horses. And where do you find the time for all this admin? And, you know, that's where we, you know, it's great that we live in a world with all this technology to help us manage things a lot more efficiently. But, you know, you do need to set aside time for that. You do need to set aside time for the management. You do need to set aside time for the entrepreneurship, or you need to find someone who will do that for you.
Exactly. And that's a difficult thing. I'll say that as a self-employed one woman show here that, you know, when you're working yourself in a business that you absolutely love, it's really hard to give up the reins, no pun intended, to, you like that, to somebody who doesn't have that love of what you're doing. Talk about a whole level of trust.
And that's when you've got to think about size. Like, I'm still a one woman operation.
Yeah.
I took some time trying to not do that. And, you know, when I started out as a personal trainer, I was with my clients, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. I didn't have a lot of time for all the other stuff. And there were more clients than I could service. So I started hiring personal trainers. But guess what? I'm not a good manager of other people. Okay. I have no experience with it. I have no experience being managed. I mean, you've heard how my parents dealt with me.
You were unmanageable.
I was unmanageable. I continue to be unmanageable. So I didn't have those skills, and I didn't have the time to get those skills, right?
Right.
And so I had to make choices about how much control I was going to give up in my business, how much training I needed to do to give up that control. Because you can't just hand over your business to someone else without learning how to manage that person, right? Or was I going to sacrifice how big my business could grow? And at this stage, that's the sacrifice I'm willing to make. You can't be everything.
Yeah.
And it can take time to find out what you can be and what you're best at.
Yeah.
Right. So, and a lot of that just happens through trial and error. But for me, you know, and I do recommend this. When I started out, I said yes to everything. I said yes to everything. I mean, that's probably where the equestrian performance team came from, is me just having an idea and going, yeah, let's do that. And some things worked and some things didn't work, and some things needed finesse and some things needed more energy than I was willing to give them to. But it gave me a chance to learn about myself and to find that sweet spot where I could make the most of my skills.
Well, and that's one of the, like when you said failures, I mean, I'm a huge believer that failures are nothing but opportunities. They fail you forward. You move on to the next thing and you learn more about yourself, like you just said.
Absolutely.
So let me bring up the word adaptability, because that was in your bio. And I immediately zoned in on that one, because I feel like in sharing some of my story in the first episode of Hitting Your Stride, as well as others to come, you know, learning about, I know, like, I've had to do a lot of adapting. I think, you know, everybody should learn how to adapt. And I think those that are able to adapt, I think manage or do a little better in life, because they kind of go with the flow, or they recognize what they shouldn't be grasping onto anymore and what opportunity is sitting right there waiting for them. So let me ask you, like, adaptability could I say, AKA pivot? You know, like,
I guess, yeah. Like, to me, adaptability is so important, and has been the essential component of my business. But there's always the point that at which I know what I'm not willing to adapt to suit the circumstances. And that's just as important to me as what I am willing to be flexible with. That there's some core values for me and for my teaching and for my business that I will not adapt
okay.
to circumstances. So this year has been a great example of that. You know, I was in Australia teaching yoga teacher trainings in a couple different cities, and things started to get tense. It was March. And I didn't know how I was going to complete my teaching tour, given what was happening. And then we got the call that I had to get back to Canada. The government said, you need to get back right away. And I got on a plane, and I had students. I had a group of students who were halfway through the course. I had another group of students who hadn't yet started. And so within a week or two, I had to adapt a 12-day, 9 hours a day training.
Wow.
To something that could be conducted online, that wasn't people sitting in front of their computer for 9 hours a day, because no one can do that. That's not possible.
Yeah.
And so that's where I really feel like all my years of adapting really served me well. I adapted as much as I could, but again, there were things I'm not willing to adapt. I'm not just going to put out videos, that students are going to watch and do learning on their own time. They need to have face-to-face time with me. There had to be live Zoom events. There had to be the same content. There had to be the same number of hours, because those are commitments that I made. So it's like, nice. Like, know where you can be flexible and know where you should not bend.
Okay.
Know where the ground is, know where the foundation is, know what your values are.
So can you share one sort of experience at the front of your brain where you were having to adapt, being adaptable grew into something positive? Would that be the COVID experience, or is there something?
Oh yeah, this has been great. I so hated it at first. I really hated it. I did not like not being in the room with my students. There's so much that gets shared on a cellular level in yoga teacher training, that, you know, that our bodies are talking to each other, that being in a room together makes us so much more than the individuals, right? It's such a synergy. And I really miss that. I really miss the nonverbal communication that I usually get from students. I found it really exhausting, but, you know, with some practice, I really grew to love it. And I loved that parents with small kids could take the, who started signing up for the course once I adapted it were people who couldn't do the course before. They lived remotely in Australia. This is a really big problem. People live so far into interregional Australia that it's either too expensive or too time consuming or just not possible at all to take time away from work and family or the farm and go to a city and do, you know, a couple weeks of teacher training. So it made something so much more accessible. And I was really excited about that for people, for neurodivergent populations, for people living with, you know, chronic pain or injuries. Sitting on the floor for 9 hours a day is really hard. Those students didn't feel like teacher training was available to them. Now they can. So I really love that adapting the course met one of my other main briefs of work now, which is accessibility, which is making teacher training more accessible to different people of different ages and different bodies of different abilities, so that teachers of different ages of different abilities and different bodies can teach yoga, so we can see more than what we usually see on the mat at the front of the class. So I think that's where adapting, it was hard, but so worth it. And I hope that I get to continue to do this.
That's awesome.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's pivot back to the horse. Speaking of pivots here a little bit. So you are an obvious animal lover. I can hear Bob barking in the background.
Can you? It's 11Zs. So
what did you notice about riders and the connection they had with their horses? What are some of your fondest memories of these times when you were around the horses and their people?
You know, I had such great examples. I was a bit of a bad example because I was going through some really tough stuff around the time I was writing Buddy, and hiding it all, probably not successfully, but Buddy became and for that reason, Buddy became a real source of comfort for me. Mm-hmm. And a place to put my focus that was more simple, I guess, than some of the other things going on in my life, you know, yep. Groom the horse, saddle the horse, ride the horse. Like for me, because I'm not an equestrian athlete, because this was recreational, that was a time of real support and comfort for me. But and so that was really positive. But I think the best thing I learned from Buddy was about how when I was driving too hard, when my wish to make progress was out of line with like my abilities or my commitment even, or what was possible in a given session, right? I pushed him too hard sometimes and he let me know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a coach saying to me, this was on another course, this wasn't on Buddy, but she said, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. And I thought, you know, wise cracker that I am, but I was pretty smart. And I said, well, if they were better organized. But the truth is, I was wrong. It takes time to train a horse. It takes right. time to train yourself, to develop the skills, to develop the muscles, the practice. And this really mirrored what was happening in my life off the horse. I was pushing too hard. I was trying to get places I wasn't prepared for or hadn't practiced. I think about Buddy, and he was trying to teach me to be present with what I was able to do today, to be content with where I was at. Even though I might have had dreams for more, I didn't have time for more. I didn't have the commitment for more. I wanted things that I didn't really want. I don't know how to explain that. And so that was big for me. But who I really learned from, firstly, this one rider, I would see him warm up in the saddle and you could literally see him listening. I think so much of what we think of as riding or training any animal is like the instructions from human to animal and the animal following through on the instructions. But this rider, he would spend all this time observing and listening and feeling before he started instructing.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. And it's something that I've brought with me into my teaching. Hmm. Even when I'm talking, and clearly I talk a lot, I try to be observing, to listening to the bodies in the room, hearing their breath, seeing the expressions on their faces. And that's what guides me to what we'll do next, not my ideas, not my pre-planned notions. So that rider, I learned so much from that rider and so much about the listening part of riding.
I love that. Yeah.
The other thing that stands out when I think about this question is when I was riding in my, you know, hippy dippy vegetarian notions, I wanted my relationship with Buddy to be a partnership. Like we were equals, like we had equal goals. You know, I was all compassion and love. My goal was to ride Buddy. Buddy's goal was to eat grass with the donkeys.
Yes.
So there was conflict from the start. But what I learned from this one coach, seeing how he trained young horses, it's also compassionate to make sure that a horse is trained properly, especially if they'll move on from one barn or from one rider to the next, that if in your compassion you allow a horse to behave badly, there's a risk it's going to suffer later on. And I deal with this now with my dog because I have spoiled this dog so badly that he wakes me up now every morning at 4:30 for first breakfast.
First breakfast.
Yes. First breakfast. Oh, and I give him too much. I haven't trained him well enough. So he's quite spoiled. And should anything happen to me that he had to be rehomed, he might really suffer, at minimum, be very confused that he's not allowed on the bed at 4:30 in the morning for first breakfast, right?
Yep.
Do you remember, was it Call of the Wild? What was that book where they had this big sled trip and they had to pack like enough food for the dogs for the return trip, but you can't overpack on a dog sled, right? So they had this like limited amount of food for the dogs to get through this sled trip. Was this Call of the Wild? Anyway, there was a lady on the trip who was like thinking she was being compassionate by sneaking food to the dogs, like extra food, because she thought they were hungry. But then they ran out of food and the dogs starved to death. So it's like, that's a pretty big example, but sometimes our compassion is not a gift for the animal. It's right. Our own stuff, right?
Yep.
And that going back to life coaching, like that's where we need to learn about ourselves so we don't pass that on, right?
Absolutely.
With training, with food, with therapy, we have to think of the longer term health of an animal, not just what feels good right now.
Yeah. I mean, horses thrive off of consistency.
Yeah.
You know, when massaging them, I observe a lot of horse owner rider connections, and yeah, absolutely. I can tell who has that, you know, where the horse is running the show, and I can tell where they have a mutual respect for each other. So it's very, right. Very clear. Yeah.
Mutual. So this is what I had wrong, like mutual respect, but someone has to be in charge.
Yes. Yep.
Right. Someone, the horse can't drive the boat. Horses can't drive. They don't have licenses. They don't have opposable thumbs.
Exactly. Exactly. But there is something there where, you know, rider says, all right, this is what we're doing. And horse says, all right, yeah, let's do this. Instead of, you know, there being a fight or a battle, right?
And that's the magic, right? Yeah. That's the magic, is when it's a team and you can see when it's a team, you can feel when it's a team.
Yeah.
And that, you know, going back to the pushing too hard, that takes time, that takes relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let me ask you, what kind of adversity have you experienced in life? So, I mean, I'm finding that in my podcasts and based on my life experiences, you know, as I'm growing as a life coach, that mindset and adversity is something that I'm really drawn to. And I think I can help people a lot with. So what did you learn about yourself? If you can think of like one thing that was really hard for you, what did you learn about yourself and how have you been able to apply those lessons as you move forward?
Oh, God.
Just one instant.
I've made so many mistakes. Okay, one that stands out, when I was quite a bit younger, when I was a teenager, I was in a car accident and I had some pretty significant injuries to my face. And it was gross, like swollen and disfigured and like super gross. And I was in hospital and my family would come in to visit me. Like this is before I had surgery and got it all fixed up. And they would look at me exactly the same way they would look at me if this hadn't happened. Like they would all fill the hospital room and like, I had my jaw wired shut. I couldn't eat solid food. They're ordering Panzerottis. They're like, they're acting like nothing's different. And it stood out to me that like my face was ruined, but they still treated me the same. So obviously I wasn't my face. Like, and for a teenage girl, that can be a big deal, right? So then I started really thinking, well, like if I'm not what I look like, if I'm not what I see in the mirror, like what am I? Like if I'm not my face. And that kind of led me on a path. And, you know, I deal now with, I have a condition that means I'm very flexible, which is great for yoga and horrible for everything else in life. And I'm in a lot of pain as a result. And I don't have the body that I started out with. I don't have the live yoga body anymore. I'm aging. I have lots of injuries. And yet I'm still a good yoga teacher. So I'm not my body. I'm not what people see. And, you know,
I love that. Yeah.
I'm not, you know, because a part of me can observe my mind, can watch my mind learn and grow and change, then I'm not my mind. Like it just set me off on this course of starting to wonder, what am I?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not what people see, and I'm not just my mind. And that was exciting. And I think that's what drew me to yoga, which is the absolute, you know, next to my husband and dog, the absolute love of my life.
Right.
I'm only saying that because they can hear me. Yoga is like a marriage.
Yeah. You know,
it requires practice and intimacy, and you learn so much about yourself. And I've learned what I'm not, but I've learned that all those things that I'm not, I also am. I'm not my body, but I am my body. I'm not my face, but I am my face. It's part of this. It's, you know, my mind is part, I'm not a duality. And I'm not explaining this very well, but.
No, I think you are. And I think the whole concept of this accident happening to you when you were 21 at that heightened age where, you know, you are all about the image you put out there. Ultimately, that was probably a blessing. So here's some reframing going on and how people think of things. It was probably a blessing for you at that younger age to help you get to where you are now. It just got you a little faster.
Yeah, I wouldn't press the reset button. It's exactly. You know, my face hurts every day. So it's crappy because I live with pain from that accident, but it shifted my life in such a profound way. I mean, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And it moved me from being a teenager to an adult. So that's like that was the formative experience that shifted my life from being a kid, irresponsible, rebellious, you know, to being an adult and having purpose.
Right.
So I wouldn't change that for anything. And yeah, it really reframed my idea of who I was, what I had to offer, and what I wanted to experience in life. And I've been able to have some pretty great experiences as a result.
Well, Heather, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and sharing and this this conversation has been amazing. I think the audience will get a lot out of everything that you had to share. So thank you so much. And this has been a lot of fun. I always love connecting with you. We're going to have to do it more often.
For sure.
So where can these listeners reach out to you if they have any questions or want to contact you about yoga teacher training?
Well, I have a website, yogatrinity.com.
Okay.
Where all the courses I'm running right now, which are all entirely adapted to online, of course, are listed. And in the shop, there's over 20 free podcasts that people can download. So little audio practices, meditations, things that people can take with them into their movement practice. So feel free to hop on there and download all the free goodies and enjoy.
Awesome. Well, I will put your information up on my social media so people can get in touch with you if that's okay.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited about this direction that you're going in and this new service and skill that you're adding to your long list of talents and gifts that you're offering other people. So wishing you all the best with that.
Aw, thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Well, thank you, Heather, and we will chat soon.
Definitely. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Bye. So there you have it. For future episodes, I have some amazing interviews lined up, hoping to open and engage the horse world on issues and topics of interest in and out of the show ring. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. You can subscribe to the podcast for new episodes of Hitting Your Stride on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. You can check me out on Facebook and Instagram and feel free to share whatever you've heard here with your friends. For that, I would be very grateful.